That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club. Originally recorded July 2017. Episode 9, Impractical Footwear.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club. In this episode, we find ourselves once again in the presence of Walt Disney with the 1950s animated classic Cinderella. But will this film woo us with its magical fairy godmother charm, or will we be downtrodden and downbeaten by its cruel and wicked ways? I am, as always, delighted to say I am joined by Joe Carter.
Charmed, I'm sure.
Daisy Swaffer.
Hi, I feel like I have a not quite so formal hello there.
It's fine. And obviously, my always lovely wife, Sammy Kelsch.
Hi!
Yes, so obviously Cinderella is one of the earlier Disney animated films, but it does fall into many of the Disney tropes, i.e. terrible songs and...
I see you're planting your flag early there then, Dave.
My flag is well and truly hoisted, I have to say. I will make no bones about it. It will be completely obvious during the recording of this podcast that I really did not like this film at all. In fact, I would go too far as say, I hated it. I honestly thought it was a terrible, terrible film. But that's just me. Obviously, I am not the target audience. In fact, none of us are. But anyway, let's see what everybody else thought.
When we likely first watched this?
Well, I first watched this about 12 hours ago, so...
Okay. Then no, you're not the target audience on any watching of this movie.
I realised as it started, I had never seen this film at all.
At least you recognise that you're not the target demographic and that that's okay.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so Joe, what did you think?
It was so awesome, I loved it. I started it, I put the kettle on to boil so I can make a cup of tea to watch during. I sat down and put it on, and then, like, near the end of the movie, I was like, oh, my cup of tea. I didn't even put the water in the cup. And I certainly didn't, you know, do any playing of games while I was watching the movie. It was so charming and enrapturing, and it was really sweet.
Daisy?
There were a lot more animals than I remembered being in this film. Like, it seemed to be more a film about animals than humans, and I wasn't really expecting that. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and, you know, you think you remember a film and you just don't.
Yeah, no. We've seen on us a few of these where we've seen them and it's like, I thought I knew this film, but I honestly don't. And Sammy?
I'm with Daisy on this. I did not remember there being that much of a contribution on the part of the mouse pals and so on and so forth. Seeing it, I recognize that I knew that they were there, but if you'd asked me to recall the movie before actually watching it, I don't think I'd have mentioned the mice. Is
yeah,
it mice?
Like, I remember the mice it's making mice. The dress, but that was it.
Yeah, I didn't remember them being such major players, though. But I thought it was a very beautiful film, and I thought parts of it were very, very good. From a writing standpoint, I think there are some changes that I personally would have made, but...
It was written in 1950.
It was written in 1950 and is based on a much, much older story. Obviously, I know a lot of people think of this as a Grimm's fairy tale, but actually it goes back further than that, and there are sort of the trope of the whole sort of put-upon sibling who becomes princess sort of thing apparently goes all the way back to, like, ancient Greek or something. So it's a well-trodden trope. It's
certainly
a very well-trodden trope, certainly.
Tale as old as time. Oh, wait, no, wrong film.
Yeah, not quite.
Daisy, no.
But obviously most of those versions probably didn't have quite the level of redentia that this one did, so...
Mm.
A uniquely Disney twist on it, I think, is fair to say.
Yeah, I also love the word rodentia because it's totally, but it sounds like plants. Mm. It's totally the right word, but it does sound like plants.
Okay, so the plot of this film is quite Spartan, but let's get into it.
But I mean, you know, if you haven't at least seen one incarnation of Cinderella by now, then you are missing out. It is a classic.
Yeah, so the film set in a tiny kingdom. Nothing's ever really described where this kingdom is.
It's a big palace for such a small kingdom, isn't it?
The palace of the royal family is large and ridiculously undefendable. It's a ridiculously stark designed palace.
Yeah, it really is.
Almost if it was designed to look fairy tale as opposed to realistic.
Isn't it the original Disney castle, though?
It probably certainly laid a lot of ground for that. I don't know when Disneyland initially was opened, but...
It was opened in the following few years after this, so...
I can certainly believe that, but this castle was not what you'd... You wouldn't want to be anywhere near it in this siege, so... So yes, it opens in a small unknown kingdom. We see a widowed gentleman, a man of money and, I assume, influence and power, with his daughter Cinderella. The father decides that the daughter needs a mother's care. So he remarries a woman who has two daughters already around Cinderella's age called Anastasia and Gisella.
I see his criteria there being someone who's already a mother and therefore knows what the gig is, and with a couple of daughters the same age, that, you know, like on paper that seems like a good fit. But I feel like maybe he should have met her first.
Yeah, it was kind of sold as being that he felt that Cinderella needed a mother's care, which I think is also code for, I don't want anything to do with raising my child. Yeah. I'm going to go off and do other things. He marries... Does the stepmother actually even get a name in this film?
Mrs. Tregain?
Yeah, it's... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, unfortunately, the father dies and the stepmother suddenly turns evil. You know, she must have had some inkling of this already.
They have a cat called Lucifer.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's not a massive red flag, then I don't know what is.
I mean, I don't know if the cat was actually owned by, you know, the family beforehand. I assume not.
No. It was the stepmother's. Because you can see her with the daughters at the very beginning with the black cat, which is teeny. And then it's now this big, you know, evil thing.
Yeah. And yes, calling it Lucifer, it's a little bit of a hint. So yes, the father dies and the stepmother shows her true self, turns to the dark side, and basically concentrates on her own daughters, pretty much sets Cinderella into slavery and wastes the family's fortunes. The chateau goes into disrepair and basically everything goes horribly wrong. Cinderella obviously being treated as servant, probably even slave would be added.
Yeah, servants get paid.
Yeah, being forced to live in a high tower with very rickety stairs.
Yeah, that whole tower seems like a great big waste of space.
Yeah, why don't she, you know, live down in the cellars where she was actually, you know, doing most of her work? And they could have got rid of that entire tower, sold the timber, sold the stone, made some money. So Cinderella, even though her life conditions are deplorable, she tries to keep herself going by dreaming of better days. And doing lots and lots of psychotropic drugs, which means she sees lots of singing animals. That's the only explanation I can come back with.
I don't think that's actually the explanation.
No.
It's a magical kingdom or something.
There you go, magical kingdom.
And
yes,
then there's a fairy the godmother.
Is it not restrictive to their flight? I don't know.
Not even the bird. I mean, the birds do wear clothes. And yet, oddly enough, they all seem to do Cinderella's bidding. So is she now using animals as servants for herself?
Yeah, are they slaves?
She's Dr. Doolittle. She can talk to the animals, and so
I think they're friends. She's made them clothes. She takes care of them. She makes sure they get food, and in return, they try and help wherever they can.
Yeah, certainly the other residents.
It's a mutual
of the
symbiotic relationship. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so one morning, having been rudely awakened by some birds
in the same manner that my cats do, so I think that's also an affectionate thing.
Yeah. Do your cats then make the bed afterwards, or
no, they're not that good.
No, yeah,
that would be cool.
They don't wear clothes.
I'd definitely
either.
Get cats then.
Cinderella is informed that one of the mice cohort has found a new mouse in a rat trap downstairs, and they have to free it, otherwise it'll get killed.
I can't believe you've skipped right over that opening song.
You'll find I skip over most songs, to be honest.
That was a really big hit for Walt Disney.
Really?
Yeah. A dream is a wish your heart makes.
Can we talk about the actual, what that means for a minute, though? Because I have a lot of dreams, and I feel like my heart is not wishing for me to have, you know, to get into fights at the office or get attacked by a horse.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Cinderella's probably dreaming about housework as well.
Yeah, and I'm definitely, my heart is not wishing that I get stuck in rickety lifts and things like that, so.
Yeah, she did wake up saying she'd had a really good dream, so I can see, like, her attitude after a really nice dream being like that.
Because it did say dreams and not nightmares.
Yeah.
So they go down and rescue the little mouse, who is named Octavius for no apparent reason.
Because it's cute.
Because he's a bit of a simple and slow mouse, they call him Gus instead.
And it does show that the mice don't normally wear clothes, it's only in her house.
It's only when being subjugated by Cinderella.
Does she have like a weird modesty thing where she's like, oh gosh, I can be friends with these animals, but we can't possibly have them running around naked like they normally do because
well, maybe
it offends because me, I don't know.
It's cold outside and she's trying to be nice.
Jacques, who is one of the lead mice, shows Gus around the house, and there's a little thing where Cinderella goes to feed all the animals and they sort of try and get past Lucifer the cat to get to the feed.
I was going to say, you forgot to mention the whole he warns Gus about the cat, and then there's the whole thing where Cinderella's got to wake up Lucifer because he's got to be fed first. And then there's a whole bit where he has an argument with the dog, whose name I've currently forgotten.
Bruno.
I was going to say Bruce. I was like, that's not right. Yeah, so you've got Bruno, who is having an adorable dream where obviously he's chasing the cat and totally winning. And Cinderella's like, oh no, you can't do that. You've got to be friends. And then Lucifer does the whole younger sibling trying to get older sibling in trouble by scratching Bruno and then pretending that Bruno attacked him. Then you get the cream, then you get the feeding of the animals. It's very important. You have to mention all these things.
Setting up
it's only
that
a short movie.
Indeed evil.
I decided at this point there was no single redeemable character in this entire movie.
You don't think Cinderella is a redeemable character?
No, for reasons I'll come into later.
Interesting. Intriguing. What about Bruno? Is he a redeemable character?
And what about the mice?
I didn't like anybody in this film. I didn't think a single character was nice. I didn't think any character was worth watching.
Oh,
I dislike
word.
This film with a passion.
Wow, you have much more feeling on this than I expected.
Sorry.
I actually liked Lucifer.
Oh, I didn't. He was a jerk.
But he was a cat. That's
but
what
he
cats
was like, yeah, he was a very cat-like jerk. And he was just like giving in to his full cat-like nature. And I loved him.
Well, yeah, cats are meant to chase mice.
And he was lovely to the ones that loved him. So, to his owner and her daughters.
Although I think Cinderella loved him and he was less nice to her.
I think he knew he could get away with it.
I'm not sure he was particularly not nice to Cinderella. I don't recall any time that he was unpleasant to
Well,
her.
When he covered his paws in dust and then proceeded to traipse around
that
the
was
very
one.
Clean
yeah,
floor.
Yeah, let's be real. That was a serious, like... That was a jerky thing to do.
Yeah, but what kid
that was just
do that?
Rude.
Like, you know, that's
yeah, but that kid would be being a jerk.
Behavior that everyone did. I don't hold that against Lucifer.
I don't know. I felt like it was a deliberately malevolent move on his part. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to track, you know, sort of through this crap with my paws because it's fun and funny. And, like, if he'd done it once and just sort of, like, walked out, fine. But deliberately making a mess of the entire room. That says, I am targeting you to me.
Well, and she didn't get in trouble for it, so, you know.
No, but she had to double her workload and probably had to redo all the washing again.
But it was pretty fresh muck at that point, and it was dry muck as well, so I'm sure it came up pretty quickly.
Well, I don't know, because it was dusty and her floors were wet, so it would have gone really quite muddy.
Going into this podcast, I was not expecting to be sat here defending Lucifer, so that's unexpected.
Yep, so they're feeding the animals. For some reason, I didn't quite work out. The mice are expected to go and eat with the rest of the farm animals, whereas Cinderella could have just kept a handful together and given it to them in her room, where they seem to spend a lot of time anyway.
Was she feeding the hens cheese?
I think it was corn.
It was corn.
Okay, right.
It looked like cheese, but it was definitely
like
corn.
Like wedges of cheese. Like, corn doesn't have that shape.
Well, it corn kernels individually. That's what I thought it was supposed to be. But yes, no. Feeding cheese to chickens probably not the best idea.
Yeah, that's why I was a bit confused as to why the mice and hens were even fighting over the same stuff.
If I was a chicken, I'd want to eat cheese.
There.
They're feeding the animals. Gus and Jack collect some of the corn, and on the way back, they run again into Lucifer. Jack tries to get away, but Gus is trapped and gets to a situation where he's hiding under one of the teacups that is being set up.
Oh, you missed the funny bit, whereas Gus is like, oh, there's food, and tries to get as much as he can, because obviously he's starved in the past. And
he doesn't look like he's starved. That's not the physique of a starved mouse.
Well, he's certainly not used to being fed, just having food given
to him. Yeah, exactly. So he's trying to get as problems. Much because he can carry it.
Do mice even have thyroids?
Probably. I don't know.
These mice probably do.
Yeah, but they also have clothes and voices who sound like Jawas.
So, you know, bless him, he's trying to take all that. And then one of the little mice drops one, so he tries to pick that up as well to be helpful. And then it just goes everywhere and goes a bit wonky.
Yeah.
And then Jack is brave and tries to distract Lucifer again to save Gus.
I feel like this then hides scene under a happened many times in the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it was just essentially the same plays over and over again.
Yeah, it did seem. I mean, in my notes, it was like it's all gone a bit Tom and Jerry, and in many ways, it did.
It was very Tom and Jerry. It was very sweet. I liked it
without the obviously slapstick violence. Well, without as much slapstick violence, there was some.
Yeah, there were some brooms.
Brooms happening. So yes, there's a whole thing of Gus being stuck in a teacup. The teacups get delivered with the breakfast to the sisters
with
and
some
the stepmother.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. And one of the sisters finds the mouse in the cup, and obviously they all blame Cinderella.
Well, to be fair, although it wasn't her fault, she should have probably checked if the cat was in the kitchen like
she,
that.
She
the
lets
teacups.
The vermin run around. I mean, the lovely, adorable mice run around everywhere, so she ought to be checking that, really.
So she gets blamed for it, and as we point out, possibly correctly gets blamed for it. So the stepmother gives her extra chores, which is weird because she seems to do most things anyway.
Yeah, they don't seem to have any other sort of like household help, and certainly the
well, I think that's the whole they are poor. They need to.
Yeah, they'd have to pay other people.
Yeah. Where she's enslaved, pretty much.
Yeah. No, she's a slave.
Meanwhile, in the kingdom's castle, and this is 25 minutes in. And we're just getting a whiff of plot now. King is having an argument with the Grand Duke. Basically, King is trying to get his son married off so that he can have grandchildren.
Which is really sweet.
Well, like, he really wants grandkids.
He really wants grandkids, but he's not really thinking about what his son wants in all of this. His son expressed an interest in settling down and getting married and having children.
But you see, that's the thing with royalty, isn't it?
It's a succession issue, isn't it?
I think he has an interest in it, but he's a hopeless romantic, so he would like that, but only with someone that he falls head over heels in love with. And his dad is impatient for that.
Yeah, the dad is getting no younger.
We don't really get a lot from the horse's mouth with regard to the actual interests of the prince.
Do we get anything? Did the prince actually say anything other than a few lines of song?
There was a lot more in the original versions. They cut a lot of his kind of character information out because it wasn't necessary for the plot. He's just an empty shell.
He's a handsome cipher.
Yeah. We assume he's nice. Empty shell of a handsome man. He's a prince. That's all we need to know.
Yeah. So the prince is coming back to the kingdom. So they decide to hold a ball in his honour. With the underlying reason to get all of the eligible maidens to this ball, even though it's tonight and they may have other plans. And basically parade them in front of the prince.
They're super obvious about it.
Yep, there's no subtlety involved. This is, you know, full on, we're doing this to get you, you know, married off.
The impression I got was that his dad had done all of the subtle things already and had just reached the point of, I don't even care about being subtle anymore.
Yeah, but it's very selfish of him because he wants it for grandchildren. He doesn't need it for succession purposes. He has a son. He has someone who will be king. So he's just being selfish.
The son needs a son for succession purposes.
But the son's not that old, I hope, because he's supposedly, in the end, spoilers, living happily ever after with Cinderella, who's going to be what?
18?
18 at this, at the most?
I thought about 16,
18.
Yeah.
16 to 18.
He can't be more than 18.
So the prince is, even if the prince is only 18 or 19, he has several years in front of him where he can find someone and, you know, have a child.
Yeah, but his dad's old and just wants to make sure that, you know.
His dad still wants to be able to be a pretend horse with the kids on the back.
Exactly. It's entirely selfish on his part.
Well, he's a king. I think they're raised to be selfish.
True.
He's thinking about the kingdom.
So, yes, this grand ball with all the maidens and the idea that his son is bound to show an interest in one of them, assuming his son is into ladies, which he might not be.
That's a good point.
That might be
that
why
is a fair
he hasn't met an eligible lady.
Royal messages go out and invite everybody to the to the ball with a royal proclamation that every eligible maiden must go. Obviously, this would include Cinderella, but her stepmother says she can only go if she can complete all of her chores in time and if she can find something suitable to wear. So Cinderella quickly returns to her room, finds an old dress that was her mother's, and looks to find a way of improving it.
Oh, I missed that the dress was her mother's.
Yeah, that's a common theme. It's always a mother's dress.
I did wonder why she had this dress. I missed that.
Then there's a whole section that I kind of was only part watching because I was doing some washing up and I was bored by this point. We have the mice. The mice basically decide that they know what's happening. They know that Cinderella's going to be made to work so hard that she's not going to have time to actually finish the dress.
Which is really sweet and empathetic of them.
Yeah, so they decide to help by... making a dress for them, for her.
With their remarkably good dressmaking skills.
Yes. Honestly, considering how excellent their dressmaking skills are, they could conceivably go into business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just open it. If it's weird that everything's being made by mice, like Cinderella could be like the sort of front face of the business.
She's front of house and the mice make everything else, yeah.
I mean, we did see in the opening scene where Cinderella's being woken up, we did see a bit where the birds were sewing up her dress. So we had a hint of the sartorial elegance and abilities of the animals previously. But yeah, it is a bit kind of...
impressive stuff.
So we have a scene where the mice go off to collect sashes and necklaces and stuff. And they obviously get these from the discarded parts of the stepsisters' outfits. Foreshadowing on that one as well. And we have a section where Gus is being chased by Lucifer. And again, we have Jacques trying to distract Lucifer so Gus can get away. It's the same scene again, just with the children. I did actually laugh at this one scene. This was the one scene that made me laugh. Because it was just Tom and Jerry, pretty much slapstick.
I did like the threading of the beads on the mouse's tail.
Oh, yeah, except there was a weird continuity error where they had four beads and then it flipped back and then there were three beads and he was putting the fourth on. So.
Yep, I saw that as well.
Yep.
I
think it's because Jacques let go of the tail, some of them fell off, and then he picked the tail back up and carried on threading them, but that was between shots. Mm.
So they managed to get away, they managed to get back to Cinderella's loft apartment, and they start making arrangements to the dress in a very organised and sing-along kind of way.
The mice were singing, and the song was quite a good song, but the mice singing was, like, painful.
Oh, it was not...
It was pleasant. Like a Jawa chorus.
It really was.
Yeah. So that kind of ruined the song for me.
Guys are all jaded and stuff. It was really sweet.
I liked the song and I liked what they were doing, but I just found mice singing a painful experience.
Yeah. So the hour draws late. Carriage for the ball arrives. I assume it's an Uber. However, Cinderella knows that although she's completed her chores, she's not going to have a chance to do anything with a dress, so she returns to her room. However... oh, look, surprise, surprise, there's a fully functional dress there for
happy
her.
Happy birthday, as Goose says.
Hooray! Yes, Goose says happy birthday.
Yeah, but adorable. It was really cool how they opened the door and then there was the light and it was like the beam of sunlight falls over her. It's like, look, you have a pretty dress to wear. We did this for you because you're so awesome.
And it looks just like that picture that you were trying to do because they're amazing dressmaking mice.
Seriously, yeah,
and that picture didn't
so
even
sweet.
Have any measurements or anything. It was just a picture.
Well, they were basing it on a dress that presumably already fit, that they were just adjusting.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's easy. I've done that.
So, putting the dress on, Cinderella rushes downstairs, happily prepares to go to the ball. Stepsisters are, slightly put out initially that she's going, and then her mother says, no, we made a deal. We said if she could do the work and make the dress, then she could go. However, the stepsisters realise that the beads and the sash are actually theirs and they've been, in inverted commas, stolen. So they rip the dress, just rip the dress to shreds.
It was quite a horrifying scene, that.
That was so disturbing. See, I could have done with not seeing that, to be honest. That was really upsetting to me.
I mean, yes, they've been bullies and they've not treated her beyond any kind of shred of human decency, but the sort of powerlessness of that scene was, yeah, that was a scene that I didn't like.
To go from that, yeah. I'm here, I'm ready, I've met all of your criteria, I'm going to the ball, I'm in this dress that's been made for me, I feel amazing, to be kind of brutally assaulted in that way and have all of that torn down as well as the dress torn apart on her, yeah, it was really like much more powerful than I thought that was going to be.
Yeah. It was at this point that I realised that, frankly, they lived in a farm with lots of farm animals. It wouldn't be that difficult to get rid of the bodies.
He's right.
Oh my god. I did wonder why she hadn't just left, though.
This might be a slightly more modern viewpoint, but, you know, there was a big pair of pointy scissors upstairs. I think the phrase is going postal.
She's still young. It is her family.
Well, it's not her family because they don't care for her. She doesn't care for them.
Yeah, but the animals are her family as well. I mean, it's her home.
Well, the animals will get fed. It's fine. Just tasty, tasty man flesh.
No, I'm not talking about your disturbing murder fantasy. I'm talking about why she doesn't leave.
Yeah, I think even in contemporary circumstances, is it very, very, very difficult to leave, you know, situations, even when it is, you know, sort
yeah,
of abusive.
I think eventually she would have got to a point where she'd have realised that she needed to leave, but she's grown up quite a bit of her childhood in this, and she probably just doesn't realise yet that she can do that.
Yeah. I think this is supposed to be the point, because obviously she, the stepmother rushes the girls out to the carriage, and Cinderella runs out the back and starts crying on a bench and saying that no matter how hard she believes, things just won't get better.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, even in sort of a fantasy setting, you know, for centuries, sort of the acceptable sort of way out of a family home for, you know, sort of a woman of this sort of level would have been to marry somebody.
Yeah.
You know, what was she likely to be able to do if she left otherwise? You know, possibly
get a job doing what she's not being paid to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a job, you know, as a dressmaker. We've already seen the skills.
She's still young.
Yeah.
It's all she knows. And to be perfectly honest, if she did run away, then you know that the stepmother's just going to call the gendarme or whatever and have her hauled back. And then she'll be locked in a room and, you know, it would be even worse.
Yeah, so Cinderella, despairing, is out back crying, and then suddenly lots of sparkles happen in a very Disney magical kind of way.
Yeah,
very Disney magical.
Cheerful, plump woman in a light blue cloak who claims to be her fairy godmother.
She is her fairy godmother.
And she did just appear in a shower of sparkles. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gift, definitely.
How come fairy godmother waited until now to show up? This girl has been in an abusive slave situation for years of her life.
Because there hasn't been this opportunity before.
Because she hadn't given up before.
Yeah, she has finally given up hope, and it's at that point. Because, you know, you don't want to come and help people while they still have hope.
No, I think that would be fine.
Yeah.
As we all know, where there's tears, there's hope.
Oh.
Can't believe you did that.
Very nice.
Using her magic wand, turns Pumpkin into a coach, for the mice into horses, although don't actually ask the mice whether they want that. Farm horse into a coachman, again, weird, don't ask them first. And the family dog into a footman. None of these animals seem particularly bothered about the fact they've been transmuted into something else.
They didn't seem, like, particularly wanting to either, though. Except for the horse that was put out, that it couldn't be a horse.
Yeah. Mm. So they do that, and then they fix Cinderella's dress into this big white flowing.
Yeah, but they fix the dress after she's like, "Oh, well, I'm not going to say thank you because hang on, wait, what about my dress?"
Yeah,
and it was very forgetful.
That was a wonderful comic scene.
Obviously, the fairy godmother's more interested in transmuting animals and torturing animals than actually in changing people's clothes.
Bippity boppity boo.
That was really weird. I mean, when she turned the mice into horses, I was slightly concerned about them being, you know, sort of transmogrified without their consent. But then they didn't seem to mind, so I guess that's okay in retrospect, but maybe ask first next time?
Yeah, it's certainly not a lesson in consent, this one, is it?
It really isn't. Nothing about this is a lesson in consent.
I like the way that with the dress, also hair and makeup and shoes came with it. So that was
really nice. It's magic.
It is magic.
That was supposedly Walt Disney's favorite little piece of animation, that dress transformation.
It was really sweet.
As anybody who knows the story, which I'm guessing is probably most people know, Godmother sort of basically cautions her that on the stroke of 12, that everything will revert back to as it was. So mice being mice, pumpkins being pumpkins.
And she's not even wearing a watch.
No. And the other thing is, I don't actually know what time of night this is supposed to be. It wasn't really made clear how late into the evening this was.
It seemed like about 8
like
o'clock.
8 or
me.
9.
Yeah. Because we switch back to the prince, who is basically greeting every single eligible maiden in the county. In the county? No, in the kingdom. Yeah, in the kingdom. And which is weird, because it was like dukes and daughters of dukes and daughters of generals. And the kingdom didn't seem that big.
I think just everyone's got a title from...
So yeah, the king and the grand duke watch this, but basically the prince is bored and he's not interested in any of these women.
And the duke's making fun of the king, which is quite funny, because that sort of, as he's saying, oh, well... What are you expecting, the king, the prince, to suddenly, you know, see the woman of his dreams and go up, and then they start dancing and it's all romantic, and it's just so funny because that's exactly what's happening. Yep. And the king's like, ha ha, I was right.
Yep. So the prince standing is being greeted by the stepsisters, who he blatantly has no interest in whatsoever. And he looks back and there's this one lone lady walking in looking confused, and
he's like, confused. That's the kind of lady I like.
Confused.
And he goes over to
confused
her.
Ladies. That's 100% my type.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes over to her and they start dancing. I don't even know if they've actually spoken at this point, but you know.
They do briefly speak. We don't hear what they're saying, but you do see them briefly speak. And I assumed in that brief speaking that perhaps they were introducing each other, but no, they weren't.
Which is...
Yeah, and considering that they don't even get as far as like names or where you're from... You know, can we really, how plausible is it that they're somehow falling in love and they don't mention, oh, by the way, my name's... Mm.
They spend the whole evening together. They're talking all through the gardens. We see them singing songs together. And at no point during all of that do they mention each other's names.
Names don't matter.
They kind of do.
No.
I don't know. I feel like at some point there's got to be some kind of exchange of personal information in a situation like
that. I've certainly never
talked
to anyone for that long without mentioning what my name is and finding out the other person's name.
Or like, hey, what do you do for a living? Or, you know, whatever.
You do get to that point where...
This is 1950s France, so, you know,
some sort of personally revealing information should come out. Like, what neighborhood do you live in?
Yeah, and it gets to a point where it becomes just awkward to ask these questions because you've pretty much been, you know, talking for ages. So yeah, the king sees them two getting on, so he retires for the evening and leaves the Grand Duke to supervise. I don't know what that means. So they go out to the palace gardens, they dance, they wander, but then suddenly the clock strikes midnight, so time has flown when they're having fun.
Oh no!
So obviously Cinderella has to get out of there before the magic spell is broken.
She should have set an alarm on her phone with like a 15-minute warning.
Exactly.
Seriously.
So she flees, leaving a glass slipper on the steps. And the Grand Duke panics because he's been told to look after them. So he sends the palace guards after her. So we get this scene where the coach and horses is being chased by some palace guards.
It's illegal to run away from the prince.
Yes. It's like, have you stolen something on the way out? That's kind of, it looks like they were just, yeah.
You stole the princess' heart.
So yeah, the palace horsemen try to catch the coach, but obviously 12 o'clock strikes and the coach suddenly reverts back to a pumpkin. The mice become mice and the dog becomes a dog and the horse becomes a horse and Cinderella becomes a slave again.
Yeah.
And then we see a scene where the pumpkin is run over by the horsemen chasing. So they return to normal and run away.
And that's the end.
The end, yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yay!
Suddenly, Cinderella realised she still has one of the glass slippers, which makes no sense because they two should have disappeared.
Yeah, but, you know. I don't
know. No, because
they
were separated because she left part of the magic behind. It sort of broke that part of the spell. Or perhaps the fairy godmother wanted her to keep the slippers anyway.
I think there was some fairy godmother meddling going on there.
Yeah. Oh, it's all meddling.
It's magic. Don't be so cynical.
Obviously, the Grand Duke, slightly worried that he has lost this lady who the prince was interested in, goes and speaks to the king.
Procrastinates on speaking to the king. Yeah,
procrastinates speaking to the king, goes and tells him the king draws a sword, so procrastination was allowed there. However, he does point out that the prince has declared true love for this unknown girl, and that he will search high and low until he finds her.
Yeah, but he also promised that he would marry whomever the slipper fit. So all the king had to do was find someone whose foot fit the slipper.
Yeah, he doesn't care about his son actually finding the girl he's fallen in love with. Just, he said this, so I will force him to marry anyone whose foot fits in this shoe.
He doesn't care about his son
again,
at all.
This guy's motivations
and you will
creepy.
Give me grandchildren, damn it.
Yeah.
Creepy! Yes. So creepy!
So yes, the proclamation goes out, which I actually paused the video and read the proclamation without realising that it was actually going to be read out later on anyway, so that was a bit of a waste of time. but the next morning, Cinderella's stepmom comes in and quickly demands that her daughters get up because the Grand Duke is coming round with his glass slipper and he's trying to find the mystery lady.
Just imagine though if she'd been a size 6.
Yep.
Yeah. As it turns out, she has the world's smallest feet, so, you know.
They're so tiny. I mean, in the context of just looking at her walking around and stuff, you don't realize how disproportionately tiny they are, but that shoe is like, it's like a child's shoe. It really is.
Cinderella hears around the Duke coming around with the shoe and is kind of distracted by this, and I think the stepmother twigs that she was the mystery girl.
Finally, twigs. God.
So she locks her up in her tower.
And I had a problem with this. That her sort of bedroom door looks to be made out of wood and looks to be made out of not that great wood. And I know she's got tiny feet, so kicking it down might have been difficult, but she could conceivably have taken anything in that room and just bashed it hard enough against that door enough times that she'd be able to get out.
Yeah.
And apparently didn't think of this and just becomes completely useless at this point.
She could have potentially yelled out of the window at the people when they were going to be leaving the house to be like, you missed one!
You missed one! I'm being held captive! Yeah. Send the guards!
Yeah.
But no, instead we get a scene where the mice try and get hold of the key and then haul it up to the tower.
Pretty much the same scene again, but this time with the key.
So we get the stepsisters trying desperately to get the glass slipper to fit. Obviously it doesn't because they have large feet and Cinderella has feet the size of a pinhead, apparently. So all this is going on. The Duke has been up all night looking for these people. So he's falling asleep. So he's a little bit sort of not really with it either. He doesn't notice the mice running around and the... So, comedy happens. The key finally gets brought up to the door, but then the cat gets in the way, and the cat traps Gus in a teacup, or is it a bowl? I think it's a bowl, actually.
It's a bowl, I think, yeah.
It's a bowl, and important. That stops the key getting to Cinderella. Again, the cat being vicious towards Cinderella.
I found this scene just really frustrating. Like, it was just getting to me that she wasn't out of the room yet.
This is how I felt about the entire film, to be honest. So they finally twig that the one thing that Lucifer is scared of is the dog, Bruno. So the birds fly down and wake up Bruno, and he runs up to the top of the stairs and then murders the cat.
Yep. Blood everywhere, it's terrible.
Forces the cat out of the window. Now, this tower is several stories up, and I'm sorry, but there's no way that cat is surviving that fall.
He defenestrated Lucifer.
Terminal velocity for a cat. Like, there's a very specific height that a cat has to fall from for them to die on a fall.
Yeah. But this wasn't the most aerodynamic cat either, was it?
The vast majority of heights above and below that, they're absolutely fine on. So the cat was probably fine.
Okay. It did seem to land on its feet.
Yeah. So the cat scared off. The key is given to Cinderella and she runs out of her imprisonment down the stairs. And just as the Duke and his footmen are leaving, she calls out to them and convinces them to fit the shoe onto her foot.
Well, the Duke sees her teeny tiny feet as she's coming down the stairs and thinks, aha!
Yeah, even if she's not the one, at least he can take her back.
Yeah. However, as the footman is walking towards Cinderella, the stepmother trips him up with her cane and the glass slipper flies through the air and smashes.
Showing the utter impracticality of these shoes. I mean, I wear impractical shoes. I have a collection of ridiculous impractical shoes and I would not wear glass slippers.
There is no way that they can possibly be comfortable.
No.
But interestingly, there is a reason behind them being glass slippers, if I may interject.
Of course.
Yes, please. I found
this piece of trivia. Apparently, in the original French story, the slippers are made of fur, which, in addition to being comfortable and practical, has a Freudian connotation in the context. I'm reading this out. I didn't say that. The absurd concept of glass slippers is due to a long-ago typo, as the old-fashioned French words for fur and glass are near homonyms.
Ah,
so they should be okay. Fur slippers.
Wow.
Fine. So she's putting her feet into a furry. Yeah, okay. The stepmother trips up the footman and the slipper comes crashing down and breaks. Which
it shatters.
You know, at that point you'd think the Grand Duke would have the stepmother arrested and killed on the spot for basically, you know, destroying the dreams of the prince. And this is another thing that I really dislike about this film. We'll get to in a minute. But it's like, oh no, it's all over. We have no other slipper, what am I going to do? And then Cinderella goes, oh, I've got the other one. I mean, that is probably the bigger clue that she is the right one than the slipper fits.
Yeah, I think then the putting of it on her foot was more of a formality than anything else.
Why were they not just out looking for the other shoe? There we go. Happy days. Cinderella is the one.
They get married.
They get married. They live happily ever after. The end. No justice, no one getting strung up and arrested, or, you know, the years of abuse are just quietly forgotten about, apparently. And she lives happily ever after. I suppose eventually she asked him what his name is, but who knows.
It probably was a surprise at the wedding vows.
Yeah. Do you, John? Oh, his name's John.
Oh, John. Oh, nice to meet you. Oh, good.
Cool.
Glad we got that one sorted out. Film over, thankfully. We get a brief title card and the book closes and that's it. Film over. No justice, no closure of story, just they live happily ever after.
Well, I guess that's the closure, is that, I don't know, she gets a nice ending. That's it. It's not a revenge film.
One of the scenes that was cut and changed before, they didn't have the, oh, they get married moment. Instead, they had Cinderella being presented at the palace in her work clothes and the, oh, what is the prince going to think now that she's not looking all prettified and she's actually like a slave girl. But the prince sees her and goes, oh, yes, you are wonderful after all.
oh, yeah, you're the one, aren't you? Sorry, I was a bit drunk last night. I don't really remember very much.
So, and it's fine. So that's the kind of the payoff that they originally had, and Walt Disney didn't feel that was a kind of big enough payoff, so they changed it instead to the, oh, we see them in their just married carriage.
What struck me from, like, the title cards onwards is that the design and the visuals of this film are really stunning. I think they're absolutely beautiful. It's not something that, again, it's 1950. It's not something that you would see now, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's absolutely gorgeous.
They went with an interesting direction on this one as well. For the humans, they filmed actors actually performing the, you know, acting it out, and then the animators were using that as a basis for drawing them, and that was the first time that this technique had been used. So in the theme of Disney, Walt Disney Studios through the decades, groundbreaking and you know, creating new methods and ways of doing things, Disney really had such a great vision with these things. He had an idea for what this movie should be, and he'd been working on this kind of bits and pieces for a few decades before this one finally actually came to fruition. This met what he wanted in his head for Cinderella to be.
Yeah
it all worked really beautifully here, I think.
Criticisms aside, you know, you've got this disturbing trend in modern Disney Pixar where all the women just start to look the same with the round face and the big eyes. Mm. You've got to say that this one has quite a nice variety of the, you know, main characters.
There is an excellent diversity of faces, certainly.
Yeah, which is really good. You know, so you've got to give it props for that as well.
I give it so much props for the design. I really do. Mm. It's beautiful.
The stepmother was animated fantastically as well. Mm. Like you got the sense of her so keenly.
Yeah. Mm.
You knew what it must have been like for Cinderella living under her in that house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a really, an excellent example of how we've got to modern animated films today. We wouldn't have got there without films like this. I think it was a really crucial stepping stone. And
absolutely.
And I think it's still a good movie, regardless as to how appealing you find the Cinderella story itself.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay, well, I guess final thoughts have sort of been covered, but we'll have a quick run around. Joe, any final thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think I've said all I wanted to say. I just wanted to sort of uplift it from the venomous criticism that was coming from you, Dave.
Yes, sorry. Well, I'm sorry. I don't like the film, and I'm not going to apologise for that. But
No, you don't have to apologise. It's great that we don't all agree. I mean, we've said this, but it was just the way... It was just sort of a bit vituperous, the cynical way you were describing the plot, and I was like, oh... yeah, so I just wanted to uplift it a little bit. But yeah, no, it's great that we disagree on stuff. And it's great when we agree, you know. I mean, I still dislike Star Wars.
Yes, and yet you're still on this podcast.
Exactly.
So magnanimous of me. Daisy?
A Disney classic, well deserving of that title. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was surprised by how much I still really enjoyed it.
Cool. And Sammy?
I suspected that I was still going to think that this was really nice and beautiful, and I did still think it was really nice and beautiful. And I'm grateful for that.
And as you might have told, I hated it. So, moving swiftly on, hopefully.
Oh, hang on. We forgot the death count. It was zero.
Yes, death count zero. Although, question mark about the cat, potentially.
I'm fairly certain that Lucifer landed on his
feet. I'm pretty certain, too.
Okay, so official death count for Disney's Cinderella, a 1950s animated movie, is, perhaps unsurprisingly, zero. Unless the wicked stepmother and her sisters were hung up and killed by the king.
But we didn't see it.
We didn't see it, so it doesn't happen.
Maybe in Cinderella 2.
That was Cinderella 2.
Revenge. Revenge of Cinderella.
Finally.
Starring Liam Neeson for no apparent reason.
I can totally see that.
I would so watch that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is Cinderella, and we are sticking with Disney because our next film will be Pirates of the Caribbean 2, which obviously not being Pirates of the Caribbean 1 offers some interesting challenges. However, we will come to that in 2 weeks' time, and I'm sure we'll give a plot synopsis of the first one so that anybody who hasn't seen it knows what's going on. But until then, I am very happy to say thank you to my guests, Joe.
I've been Joe.
Daisy.
I've been Daisy.
And Sammy.
I am and always will be Sammy.
And I have been a cynical sod. My name is David, and goodbye.
So true.
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcast Thing network. Find us on Twitter at @podcast_thing and on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.